100 years ago, the United States began its noble experiment. It took an amendment to the Constitution to ban the production and sale of alcohol. For a relatively brief 13 years, prohibition was the law of the land, but it changed the culture of the United States for generations to come. William Rohrabaugh is professor of history at the University of Washington. He's also author of Prohibition, A Very Short Introduction, and he joins us now. Professor, welcome.
Happy to be here.
And take us back 100 years. How did it get to the point that a freedom-loving country like the United States decided to outright ban alcohol?
It was a combination of circumstances. The biggest problem was that ever since the founding of the colonies, Americans were heavy drinking people. This heavy drinking, when you had cheap whiskey, which you did with all the corn coming from the Midwest, and as a result, there was a lot of whiskey drinking and a lot of public drunkenness, child abuse and wife beating and crime and poverty. And after the Civil War, there were a lot of Civil War veterans who were self-medicating with alcohol. And so in the early 1870s, a number of women in the state of Ohio created the WCTU, the Women's Christian Temperance Union. The WCTU became the world's largest women's organization. It was not all that effective. And what changes things in the 1890s is the organization of a new group called the Anti-Saloon League. They joined together to campaign for local prohibition, then state prohibition, and then finally a national constitutional amendment to have nationwide prohibition.
Where was the alcohol lobby? I mean, big alcohol companies of today would have never let this happen.
Yes. Well, the only place where there was wine was California. The California wine industry did have influence in California, but not outside the state. The distillers had discredited themselves. They were caught in a scandal in the Grant administration, bribing federal inspectors not to pay taxes. So no one wanted to have anything to do with the distillers, so the distillers were kind of out of it politically. The political power came from the brewers, and Americans switched after the Civil War from whiskey to beer, and almost all the brewers in America were German, or German immigrants, or the children of German immigrants.
Well, I see where this is going. This happens in 1920, soon after World War I.
Now, if you're trying to stop prohibition, the people who really wanted to stop this are the brewers and the saloon keepers, right? And so they have to funnel money into the politicians that will try to stop this. But they can't give money openly because that's too, that doesn't look good, right? So they give money through something called the German-American Alliance, which was founded in 1900 by the Kaiser as an official organization of German immigrants in the United States to promote friendship between Germany and America. And so in 1914, when World War I breaks out, the German-American Alliance is pro-German in all of its propaganda. You know, they're pro-German in the war, but they're also pro-alcohol.
Today, when I think of prohibition, I think of speakeasies, mobsters, moonshine, all these efforts to take drinking underground. What actually happened as soon as that amendment went into effect?
Drinking went underground. It absolutely did. The obvious saloons that had licenses that were on street corners that were visible, they couldn't in most places actually operate very long. They had to close. The restaurants that served alcohol had to close. And instead, speakeasies opened in basements in places that were where they didn't have signs on the door. Sometimes they were in apartment buildings, and they wanted to rent cheap rent. So a lot of the speakeasies were located in low-rent neighborhoods.
This must have been seismic.
Oh, yes, it absolutely. Although, a large number of people did stop drinking. And maybe more accurately, a large number of people never started drinking. Because think about it. If you were born in 1900, the first time that you could take a legal drink would be 1933. And by the time you were 33 years old, perhaps you didn't care anymore. The heaviest drinking period in people's lives is in their 20s. So a lot of people, they became a light drinking generation. But of course, the speakeasies also became places where people did drink, and particularly in big cities like New York and San Francisco and Chicago.
Is it true that the cocktail came out of prohibition?
Yes and no. The cocktail as a word was invented much earlier, before the Civil War. It comes from the 1850s. But the popularity of the cocktail dates from Prohibition, because a lot of the liquor that was available was poor quality. It simply didn't taste very good. And so if you mixed it with something, it tasted better.
By the early 1930s, this didn't take long. Public opinion had started to shift. Here is some very old tape of then presidential candidate Franklin Delano Roosevelt campaigning in 1932.
But there can be no possible misunderstanding. Let me read the provisions of the Democratic platform on this point. And let me add that it's in plain English. It begins, we advocate the repeal of the 18th Amendment.
And turns out he made good on that pledge. The 21st Amendment was ratified by the end of his first year in office. No more prohibition.
It was ratified even faster than the 18th Amendment had been.
How did that happen so quickly?
Public opinion turned. It started to turn in the mid-20s, but I think what really did it was the rise of criminal gangs that were major gangs. You know, one thinks of Al Capone, right, of course, in Chicago. You know, the TV series Boardwalk Empire about Atlantic City is actually based on a real story. And Atlantic City was one of the major places of corruption.
So you got rid of one evil, but you got an even worse one in return.
That's what people decided by the early 30s. You no longer had tax revenue coming in from alcohol. Instead, you had to raise taxes of other types, particularly the income tax. And in addition to that, the bootleggers were getting rich. The price of alcohol did go up. During Prohibition, alcohol cost about five times as much as it did before Prohibition. Hmm. And, of course, all that profit is going right into the pockets of Capone and people like that. And they don't pay any taxes on any of that money either. So it was clear that the people who put this in, I mean, partly it was done as like patriotism in World War I, but it was also a kind of naivete on the part of people who said, oh, if we just pass a law, that will be the end of it. People will stop drinking. And they didn't grasp that people who like to drink were not going to stop drinking just because there was a law.
That's why it's so interesting, because in modern times, the word prohibition comes up in the debate about legalizing marijuana.
Absolutely.
In the 1980s and the 1990s during the war on drugs. There were clear parallels to prohibition where people were making the argument that cracking down on drug use would reduce crime and poverty and all those evil things you were talking about before that got prohibition going. Do you think that the prohibition had a lasting legacy on American culture even today?
Well, one of the things that Roosevelt was very clear about in 1933 was that he wanted legal alcohol, but he also wanted alcohol taxed and he wanted alcohol regulated. As a result, alcohol, which had been almost a Wild West drink before Prohibition, there were very few rules of any kind. And so Roosevelt wanted to make sure that we didn't go back to a system where you just sold anything to anybody anytime. And instead, you had a more regulated kind of environment with taxes that were actually necessary. And one of the major reasons that repeal took place in 1933 was that every government in the United States, city, county, state, and federal, was hurting for money. Meanwhile, there's Al Capone making $200 million a year untaxed. Huh?
So in the end, was it folly?
Yes, I think it's fair to say that it was folly. It didn't fit the fact that alcohol had been a traditional drink with Americans going back to actually the Mayflower, if you look at the alcohol that they brought on board. And so there just wasn't any way that a hard-drinking society could be, you know, turn the spigot totally off.
Well, and look at the stats. Today, Americans are drinking more than 2 gallons of alcohol a year on average. That's more than what they were drinking when Prohibition first started. So, you know, it's hard to get people who like to drink to stop drinking.
Well, they're not the same people, of course.
Yeah.
But it is interesting that alcohol consumption has gone up in the last 20 years. It went down from the 1970s until about 2000. There was a generation in there that didn't drink as much. And then what I think has driven the increase in the last 20 years, you could say it's the rise of the millennials, but what it really is the 3 million Afghan-Iraq war veterans, because they're self-medicating on alcohol in exactly the same way that World War II veterans did.
Hmm. That's William Rohrabaugh, professor of history at the University of Washington. Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers to you, too.